And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to Friday's 9 till noon show, the 17th of October 2025. It's just approaching 4 minutes past nine, and we're with you for the next 3 hours. And for the first hour, we have our Friday panel. I'll introduce them to you very, very shortly. But I want to invite you to be part of the conversation as well. Your view is incredibly important, as you know. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. If you're listening from outside of the Republic, it's 00 353 866 20 5000. If you want to give us a call, 074 91 25,000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And of course, if you want to watch the program, you can do so on your smart TV or Fire Stick, on your on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. We're across Facebook and on X as well. Right. Let us say good morning to Ms. Grainne Hines, member of Letterkenny Active Retirement. Good morning to you, Grainne. How are you keeping?
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Good morning,
Mr. Great to see you again.
Nice to talk to you.
Councillor Troy Gallagher, Labour Party councillor in Islington, London. Good morning, Troy.
Morning, Greg. Good morning, listeners. Thanks for the invite.
No, it's great to have you with us. And Lorraine Thompson, CEO of the Donegal Youth Services. Hi, how are you getting on, Lorraine?
Good, Greg. Good morning to you. Good morning, Grainne. Good morning, Troy.
Okay, let's get on with it. And this day week, the people of Ireland will go to the polls to elect the country's 10th president. Catherine Connolly enjoys a significant lead in the latest polls at 38% over her rival Heather Humphreys on 20%. Jim Gavin remains on the ballot paper, of course. He's polling around 5%, while 6% said they'll spoil their vote. So there was a big campaign that continues encouraging people to spoil their vote, but that's running at 6% at the moment. I'll start with you, Grainne. Is the race all but over? And if so, what went so wrong for Heather Humphreys?
Well, I think she was put in a box with the government, the present government, and a lot of people have issues on that. And I think she is suffering the backlash. I don't think it's quite fair. I think she should be regarded as her own person, her own history, and not all the time be blamed for what the government did. As we all know, the president has little influence anyway in any decisions that are made. Now, they can be a unifying voice for people, and the division in the country today, and I think that's the most important thing that Heather has emphasised, and that is that people get together as groups, as communities, North and South, Catholic and Protestant, immigrants and nationals. And it's unfortunate that what's going on at the moment is a division. And I find it very hard to contain myself. And I don't think it helps that Catherine is not answering the questions she's asked. There are some very serious issues that I would bring up regarding Catherine, and that is her trip to Syria. I myself have lived in a country where there was a dictator, and there is no way that you will meet people who will speak their minds when you're being conducted around by the dictator's friends.
Well, what is the issue that you have with that particularly?
I have a terrible big issue with it. First of all, fact-finding is very difficult for somebody who goes to a country who cannot speak the language, hasn't got somebody with her as an interpreter, a reliable interpreter. I know myself that those Palestinians that she says she met, there is no way they could speak out in any way freely, because the people around them, they would have disappeared by the next day.
Yeah, but that's
and I just find that naive.
Yeah, but you're asking her to prove a negative or something similar to that. I mean, you're concluding that whom she spoke to weren't able to speak freely or speak the language. It's a big reach then to expect her to adequately respond to really what's an unsubstantiated opinion.
Yeah, but let her admit that obviously going out, not knowing the language, meeting people, there were no Palestinians who disagreed with Assad were there, because most of them would have fled. Mm. So she shouldn't have been that naive.
Let me bring you back to
Heather.
To
think that she would get a definite and a truthful response from the people there. They were frightened people.
Okay.
Their lives were at risk if they opened their mouths.
Do you think you could go to America now and get truthful responses
perhaps,
from people.
Yes, perhaps, but perhaps, I'm only dealing with this question.
Of course, but I'm trying, I'm trying to broaden it out. I just want to ask you a question about Heather Humphreys. You talked about how she can't decouple herself from Fine Gael. It's Fine Gael that selected her. It's Fine Gael that put her forward. It's Fine Gael that are spending the money in the campaign. It's Fine Gael that are putting up the posters. She was a minister in Fine Gael for years. How can she in any way decouple herself from Fine Gael just because she's running for this position?
Oh, I think she's a very forthright and honest person. And she's an Ulster woman. She's comes from a rural community. There are so many positives, and I think she could be good influence in trying to get a united Ireland. I think it's very important that we recognise other voices in the community. And I just find that she's like, if I was asked, who would you like as a neighbour? Who would you talk over the wall to? And I think I would say Heather. I'm not actually campaigning for her, but that's my personal feeling.
This is we invite people on for their opinions, and we'll come back to you on it as well, because this is a sort of it's not sort of three separate interviews too. It is a debate. Troy, listening to Grania, makes a passionate, strong argument there. I don't know if you want to sort of reflect on anything that Grania's been saying, but more generally speaking, is the race done as well?
I think that where we are at this point, there's a huge lead for Catherine Connolly. I think that it's going to be difficult. But that being said, there's still a week left and there's still quite a big portion who haven't made up their minds. And that includes whether they're going to vote. But what I would say is that, you know, I really think that this presidential election has been a real masterclass for party leaders and political leaders on not how to select presidential selections and running an election. You know, I've no doubt in 5 years' time this will be discussed in political textbooks at UCD and Trinity for those doing politics, just as the 1990 presidential election was, where Charles Haughey and Alan Jost made catastrophic errors throughout that election. You know, and it's really frightening to see how lessons still haven't been learned. Party leaders using heavy-handedness, trying to utilise conventions to put forward their candidates or have their candidates already, and also not going out to have quality scoping out of candidates across Ireland from all walks of life. They all knew that this date was coming. They all knew that Michael Dee was standing down. They had plenty of time to scope out good quality candidates to put before the people to give a representative. I agree with what Grania said about what the president should be. Obviously, it's a constitutional symbolic role, but it's one to bring people together. It should be a unifying voice, and engaging with the diaspora, engaging with all regions across the whole of Ireland. I really think there has to be a massive review taken by all parties across on how they select candidates and how they run future presidential elections.
Well, Fine Gael did all right, though, didn't they? I mean, Heather Humphreys stepped up, obviously, because of circumstances outside of Fine Gael's control. Sinn Féin had their options, but they decided to go for a United Left candidate. Really, is it only Fianna Fáil that really you're talking about here now?
No. Can we take a step back, Greg, if you don't mind? With Mairead McGuinness, Fine Gael chose Mairead McGuinness. It was all Mairead McGuinness. There was a few Francis Fitzgerald and one or two others in the background. But even with Mairead McGuinness' health problems, that the due diligence should have taken that out at the start before she was actually fully endorsed by going forward. And that's for Fine Gael. For Sinn Féin, Mary Lou had the whole summer to decide who she was going to go for. There was a couple of months off. We're waiting for the moment we're going to have a big reveal. And I think Gerald Burns at one weekend in August was mooted under the guise of a game changer text that went out. And everyone was saying, who is this going to be? The suspicion around even within the diaspora is that it would be Michelle O'Neill would be the candidate. We're waiting to a certain time in September for her to complete some parts of her work before it was announced. And then all of a sudden, despite all that waiting, the next thing, the big announcement happens and they're endorsing Catherine Connolly. So 5 months of...
Yeah, but it was a game changer, wasn't it? Look where she is at the polls. 95% of Sinn Féin voters are going to vote for Catherine Connolly, according to that poll. That's a game changer. It was the media that speculated in relation to oh, the man's
Jarlath Burns.
Yeah, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I'll come back to you, Lorraine Thompson. How engaged are you? What's your overview of how things have been going and where they will go?
I think that the campaign obviously was definitely hurled under the spotlight when we had a few choice candidates throwing their name in the ring in the early days. They probably brought it to people's attention very quickly. I do think obviously there's a lot of kind of political apathy around this. You know, Michael Dee's been there for 14 years. It's a long time. Conscious of how maybe young people are perceiving this campaign. I personally am delighted to see two women, two very strong women, I have to say, both coming at it with their different strengths, different attributes. I think that either would do a good job and bring in those strengths. And I always say that, you know, anybody coming into a job brings their own experience, their own strengths. Mm-hmm. But they're coming into the job for the first time, so they have to be given a chance to embed into it. You know, so obviously we've talked about Heather and her rural connections, which are really powerful. Her previous experience in kind of diplomatic circles, I think, which is going to be very important in this role. Obviously that moral conscience bit that Catherine will bring to it. So I can see strengths on both sides.
I think it's interesting, the diplomatic element of the presidency. I mean, you know, we had the deputy leader of the government of this country calling President Trump a gowl. You know, we've sided with whatever Ursula von der Leyen wants in relation to Israel and their position and what have you. We're fanning around with the occupied territories bill because we don't want to pee off the American sort of Jewish community there. So, I mean, how could Lorraine, the president, how can we focus on sort of the diplomacy element of that role when the leaders of the government of this country, who actually do speak on behalf of us as elected representatives, run roughshod with diplomacy? I don't understand the focus on her and in terms of diplomacy, Lorraine.
No, I feel that if she's in the role, I think that that's something she could bring to it. Listen, it's not a perfect system. I mean, the world that we're living in at the minute, there are so many facets that I think Ireland as a small country is trying to navigate. You know, obviously, in the first instance, it's looking after our role, our neutrality. You know, can you have an opinion in this global stage that's not going to impact on the country? When we talk about all politics being local and the need for addressing the issues that the people face on a daily basis, you know, unemployment, health issues, housing issues,
is the thing that I don't understand, right, about how representing the people. This is a position. Well, both of these ladies, by the way, are coming in with close on 250 grand a year. Okay. Mm. They're also going to be living in a massive house on 350 grand a year. They're never going to be of the people, are they? Or representative of the people or understanding what it's like to, you know, live the life that many of us have to live.
Oh, no, Greg, I know I could disagree with you there.
Please,
like, we all live in different areas in our lives, and we are, if we're intelligent and we're committed to a cause, we know what our people live. We know the hardships, we know the poverty. We try and do the best we can to help people. But, like, you cannot blame the president for what the government does. You can blame him for the morality, the unity in a country, that he talks to all people, listens to all people, or she in this case, that they listen to all people and they visit the poor, they visit the disadvantaged, the mentally ill. They have a remit to communicate with the people and to bring that message perhaps back to the government. Mm. They will have an influence. Like, there's more done in closed rooms sometimes than on the oil floor.
Mm. Like, yeah, it's quite empathy. And yes. They both have it. Yeah. I think they both have it.
Yeah, and I think that a president is, empathy is probably the number one thing that is needed. She needs to, and they have to be committed. It's not, I don't think anybody would choose it. I think you can see we only had two candidates. Well, we had three, and unfortunately, at least Fianna Fáil did step up and put somebody forward. I was disappointed that Sinn Féin didn't put somebody forward. You know, that they decided, no, they were going to just be part of an amalgamation. because they are a strong party. They're very popular in the country. They have a good mandate, and there's lots of things they do very well. And I was very disappointed that they couldn't, from all the people they have, that they couldn't put somebody forward. Also with Labour, like I probably lean towards Labour as my politics. And I also was disappointed because they have some very good people. People who worked hard for the country in the past.
Michael D. Higgins obviously has a Labour background, but the Labour Party's in a bit of disarray over the head of this anyway now, with people stepping away from the party and not happy with the endorsement of Ms Connolly.
Yeah, well, as a Labour supporter, I was very disappointed at the fact that they couldn't stand up and say, we're Labour, this is our candidate, this is our...
Are any of you concerned about the triple lock? A lot of talk about neutrality and independence and all this type of stuff. You know, I mean, obviously Heather Humphreys is part of a government in favour of getting rid of the triple lock. Catherine Connolly wants it retained, but at the same time, she wouldn't use the powers that she has, she stated, to sort of refer the bill to the Supreme Court for her own reasons, that she justifies that herself. But, you know, like, is it a ceremonial role or... is it not? You know what I mean? It's, we seem to cherry pick it depending on who you support, Troy.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is a ceremonial role. And I think, you know, all this, the candidates were going out doing their pitches across the country, talking about housing, talking about what they can do for small, medium business. The simple fact, Greg, is they can absolutely do nothing whatsoever about any of that. What they can do, though, and the power of the presidency is through diplomacy, is engaged with the diaspora. And not one of the two candidates, or three if you include Jim Gavin, engaged with the diaspora, the global Irish diaspora.
Did Michael D. Higgins engage much in your time over London?
He did. 2010, he came to London Irish Centre, myself and Councillor O'Sullivan and a few other ones, Irish leaders here.
That was before he was elected, though.
It was when he was a candidate. Yeah,
I'm on about when he was a president. Was there an engagement over there? The first state visit
of an Irish president, but he had, and that was the big one. But there was also engagements through embassy events too. He's also the patron of ICAP, the Donegal charity that I'm the board member of. So he does use the presidential powers to enhance the soft power within the diaspora.
Okay.
For connection.
Lorraine, you talked about...
He's also the patron of Active Retirement Ireland.
Yeah. Brilliant. Fantastic. Thanks, Lorraine.
Lorraine.
We have met him and talked to him, and he knows what we do, and he's very supportive. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Indeed. Lorraine, there is
We hope that will continue with the new president.
We shall see. Depends where
she is.
All right, Lorraine, there seems... What will the turnout be? You know, you talked about the level of young people engaged in it. There's obviously a large percentage of the population as well that feel maybe that neither candidate is hovering over their sort of political views or their ideology, right? So that potentially could take quite a number of voters out of it to begin with, and then the apathy and everything else, you know, could be low 30s for crying out loud.
I feel, yeah. I mean, people don't come out to vote for politicians that can make a difference. So in this instance, it's not hard to see why they wouldn't go out to vote, especially if the candidate maybe doesn't speak to them, if they're not paying attention. You know, we haven't even talked about social media algorithms. You know, what are you seeing on your screen on a daily basis? For young people, like, are they even watching national
podcasts? Well, I think in relation to that, this is where Catherine Connolly does have an advantage, because she went viral with the Keep Your Peace and the slam dunking and that kind of stuff. And that did flood the algorithms of TikTok and other platforms as well. You know, Heather Humphreys perhaps, and maybe it's just not her style. I thought it was AI, I'll be completely honest with you, but it turns out it wasn't.
Hardly it's not. It's her background, yeah.
You know, because I've met her and I just didn't think she had that level of keep your peas and slam dunking, and her fair play to her.
In terms of his profile with young people, you know, they probably view him as somebody who's that kind of cute figurehead, Mickey D, you know, all of the different kind of cosy ways people refer to him. Would they be au fait with kind of what his role is? I mean, other than their kind of classes in school, what would they see in terms of their day-to-day living of what the President of Ireland does? It's probably minimal.
Okay, yeah, I think the schools should take a much bigger interest in politics and educating children to think logically and to look at both sides. Like I have looked, Catherine has some very good points. I wouldn't condemn her, and I'd be happy if she does win, but I prefer to have somebody who's down to earth who answers questions. Now, Greg, if you ask me a question and I just give you a little smile and started to give you a lesson and a lecture, I don't think you'd be very happy. Mm. And I think the people who are interviewing the two of them are very nervous.
Well,
I think they're afraid of being sued by her campaign team.
Yes, but
they're afraid to say anything.
I also think that for the most part, every single effort has been made to find a story of dirt on the two of them. We haven't really got to know them very well. And every single question, and I don't prepare questions, right? I just ask questions that are in my head. But I know for a fact you do have on the big shows, your RT Morning Ireland This Morning, for an example, they're structured questions and you have a team of researchers in there. And the aim is to catch the candidate out. The aim is for that viral moment. The aim is for that campaign shifting
moment. You're looking for that one thing that they can...
And I feel honestly that to some extent... the media is doing the public a disservice in getting to know the people in the 100%. Role that they actually have.
100%.
Glad that Blair has been a female in that space, because if you come across too strong, too bolshy, too opinionated, you get a public persona then. And equally, if you come across too male, too meek mannered, too soft, you know, and I think women women definitely have to feel that a lot more than men. So that's why I'm glad it's two women against each other. And as I say, I think either of them will do a very good job in the role.
Yeah, it's like interesting. Jim Gavin, in one of the debates, he was gesturing with his hand outwards like this all of the time. And I was thinking to myself when I was watching it, if that was one of the women, I wonder how that would be framed the next day. Not necessarily in the mainstream media, but on social media, you know.
To be slated for it, yeah.
Yeah, as if folks are very
men
aggressive and,
women. And
dominate. Troy, do you want to... Yeah. I'll tell you, I'm going to take a break. We're going to have another 5 minutes on this before we move on. Back after these. We're in the company of Lorraine Thompson, Councillor Troy Gallagher and Grainne Hynes. And the first part of this has been a conversation about the presidential election, which takes place this day week. Some of your comments coming in. Greg, a lot of people think we've no call for a president. I think on the cost to the state, money that could be spent more wisely. The lady talking, Grainne, about the presidential candidate and stating Heather Humphreys would be the neighbour she would prefer to talk over the wall to. I think Heather should speak to her actual neighbours I'll come back to that in a moment. Sinn Féin wanted Burns to stand. He wasn't interested. Then they went with Connolly. That's the fact, Greg. Another, this must be the dullest, pathetic and lacklustre election in recent history. If Maria Steen had been standing and I had been responsible for the campaign, she'd have won the vote in Donegal by far. P.S. Sinn Féin must be kicking their own bums now for not putting up their own candidate. Yet another strategic blunder to add to a long list. Sinn Féin have done this tactically. They are trying to keep an eye on the next general election. The left was incredibly scattered. And that's cost them dearly over the last wee while. This is very much part of a strategy towards the next general election. If they can coalesce and they can work well together now, it's exactly what they'll be doing in the next general election. So I believe this is a test of how unified the left can be. I don't know if any of you disagree or agree with that.
Sinn Féin should have put forward a candidate because they should think of, you know, they're the way the country look at them. And a Sinn Féin president might have been a unifying effect in many ways of different things. And I'm very disappointed. I think they've made a mistake. I think it is a mistake. I think Fianna Fáil did try to step away from the political environment by, nominating Jim Gavin. It didn't work out, unfortunately, but at least they had the courage to put forward somebody who wasn't a political member of the government. But they did try. Heather did step up. She, you have to say that, and Catherine stepped up. And I wish both of them good luck. And please come out and vote.
Yeah, of course. Would we benefit from a Maria Steen in the race, Lorraine, for an example? That seems to be, I mean, there were other people seeking to get on the ballot paper, but her name, she was so close, in fact, to senators or TDs away. I'll ask Lorraine and come back to the rest of you before we move on.
Would we benefit from that,
even if maybe her views don't align with yours?
Sorry, so that last
Would video? We benefit from it, even if, as an individual, her views wouldn't align with yours or mine or any, or you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I mean, it's been floated here a few times in this conversation and in others. Obviously, the more candidates you have, the better choice you have. You know, and people might, I mean, you've talked about Sinn Féin not engaging. Was it a resource issue? Probably, possibly. Did they, you know, see that there's not a big appetite in this election? So maybe they...
Well, there's 20-20-20. That's the way it is, right? It's with the three big parties. And then you've got, you know, if Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael had got the candidates right, they're cross-pollinating. And then you'd have the left vote, in inverted commas, split with Catherine Connolly. So there's... I think it was... I personally, Lorraine, sorry, and I'm not contradicting you, but it's just for the sake of the conversation. Tactically, it probably was the right decision because now their candidate that they're endorsing is likely to win.
Absolutely. No, and you can't argue with that strategy. Like, it won out in the end. But I do wonder, in terms of having more candidates, more interest, people coming from different geographical areas, different political ideations.
Yeah.
I think that obviously brings to the fore. I often looked at the last presidential campaign in America and thought, is that the best that that country can do in terms of those candidates? So I do think it's a bit of a reflection. And for me, the question, the bigger question is, really, why do the political parties want to invest so much in a candidate that's going to disassociate from them when they get into the position? Yeah. So, like, what is the larger benefit other than, you know, political ideations and I don't know, maybe they feel that they have won something, but I'm not really sure about, you know, if they get their candidate in, what's the bigger win?
Troy, I think if Maria Steen was in it, and I'm not sure if this would be healthy or unhealthy, but the debates would be far more interesting because it would drill down more into things like immigration, for an example, and what have you. These are not really topics. It's interesting to know where the president stands, right, but not areas of influence. So you, a question's put on immigration to Heather Humphreys and Catherine Connolly, and they're both in the same space in answering that. And it is one of the big issues in a lot of Western countries. So you would have far more lively debates, but they probably would be less focused on presidential matters.
Yeah, it would be. But it would also give that authentic feel as well. And even though with Maria Steen, that people may agree or disagree with her points of view, it does put out where she stands on a number of things, but also allows that wider quality of debate. And it gives that space for that level of dialogue across the country. For those who feel disaffected or for whatever reason may find themselves agreeing with Maria Steen. But just going back to the point earlier on about Jim, you mentioned about Jim Gavin and the behaviour.
The gesturing,
The gesturing. That reminded me back in 1990 of Brian Lenihan when he addressed the nation on the RT show and said he had no recollection of that evening when he pointed to the camera, speaking into the camera, which was recognised by Fianna Fáil and by wider comms that's not the way you speak to the nation or make a point. You know, and I think when I seen Jim Gavin do that, I thought lessons haven't learned. Whoever your comms person has not learned the lessons.
And whoever the comms person's in told him to get at Catherine Connolly straight away. And she had she hadn't the first sentence out of his mouth, and you could see what he was trying to do. And he was ill-prepared, and I don't think it's in his character.
Oh, no. I don't know the man. I've never met him. I believe he's a lovely man from people who have done. But again, it just shows you that, and I mean this with the greatest respect, the inexperience of not being involved in the political field and being plucked up and put into one of the biggest national campaigns the state will run. And I think that was an injustice to Jim Gavin equally as much and his family as much as it was towards.
Yeah, because we keep saying it's not a political position, but it is, and it's also scrutinised as such. And if you were to not answer certain questions as president, you'd be criticised for being a do-nothing president. But those questions are often politically motivated. Stay where you are. Greg, I'm listening to your discussion on the presidency. In my opinion, we'd be far better discussing how we could get a new government first, because at the moment we have neither. Well, you all had a very good opportunity very, very recently to go out and vote, and you returned the government with a really strong vote, close on 40, if not a little over 40%. So people have had that opportunity quite recently, and they will again in a couple of years. Another caller says, I think it's a masterstroke from Sinn Féin by not running a candidate. It's a great step to unite the left ahead of future general elections. A very good forward-thinking decision. That's what I believe they did too. Had John Hume and co. not engaged with the IRA, we'd have no peace process. And as for Grania, that Catherine Connolly, sorry, and as for, not Grania, and as for the woman that Catherine Connolly employed, was Haughey not involved in gun running and later became Taoiseach? And lastly, was Heather Humphreys ever asked what she thought of the burning of effigies on the 12th of July bonfires? And another, this must be the dullest, pathetic and most lacklustre election in recent history. If Maria Steen had been standing, and I've read that one already. Just a couple before the next break. Catherine Connolly doesn't even know if her husband's going to live with her in the IRA. I find that a strange one. Another, what's the reason Sinn Féin did not put someone up for president if all truth were told, I wonder? Another, where does the election stand if the High Court judges that the whip used in this election process is a breach of the Constitution? Probably not going to happen. And another, I hope the country has the cop on to spoil the vote at a very high level and show up this government for what it is. It's sickening, Greg. The spoil the vote thing, I don't understand, because what it actually does is it hands the election to one of potentially either or the candidates that you don't want to be president. It is completely futile. What you've written on your ballot paper is not recorded. It's the same as if you put three ones in. It's like, I understand where people are coming from. If I was protesting, I'd vote Jim Gavin.
Yeah, because he's going to be on the ballot paper. Yeah, I don't understand that myself in terms of the, I mean, I get people are annoyed and they're, you know, wanting to let their voice be heard in some kind of way, but it seems to be futile. It seems to be aligned with, well, don't bother coming out if that's how you feel.
Well, they won't, Lorraine. People will say, I'm going to spoil my vote, and they won't. You have an extra cup of tea, or you put your feet up and watch Holmes Under the Hammer. You don't get up and go and spoil your vote.
No, I don't. I think, please don't spoil your vote. Go out and vote. Make up your mind. We do need a vote. And it's very important for your children and your grandchildren to see you going out to vote.
Indeed. Absolutely.
You have to, yes, it's a big influence. And especially grandparents. Well, we all, probably the older generation, most of us will go out and vote, because we know the difference that it makes. We've lived and we've travelled. We know countries where people aren't allowed to vote, or women weren't allowed to vote. And it was a hard-fought battle to get the vote for women. Mm. So I am appealing to all parents and grandparents to give their children good
advice. I don't mind it for you, but you're talking about dictatorships there and how we're so lucky to not live in one. And then you were criticising Catherine Connolly earlier on for going out there and perhaps trying to hear the voices of people that don't have a vote. It seems a bit of a contradiction, if you don't mind me saying so.
No, it's not a contradiction, because when you go out to a country... I mean, I've lived under a dictator for 8-9 years, and I didn't speak all the languages in the country. There's very little that outsiders are going to. You go out there and you're, it's like saying that Tony Blair and et cetera could run Palestine. It's the Palestinians who need to run Palestine.
Well, we can't
not
get into that
strangers.
One. Okay, we'll be back with more after these. Given the recent Central Statistics Office figure showing that Donegal has the highest rate of people living on low incomes in the state, with one in four below the low income threshold, what specific ring-fenced government investment and policy changes do you think are needed to address this deep-seated regional inequality, particularly to tackle local factors like the DCB scheme, the lack of regional infrastructure and the persistent issue of low-wage employment? Lorraine, this is what our young people are growing up into. What could or should be done? You're muted. Lorraine, I'm very disappointed in you. I didn't think it would be you that would be muted. I'd Troy down as the muter. Go ahead, Lorraine.
As I was saying to myself a second ago, yeah, this is not a new issue, Greg. I have been with Donegal Youth Service now for 20 plus years, and I have lost count of how many funding applications I have written
detailing the problems that we're having in terms of Donegal as an isolated county, the problems with transport, infrastructure, accessibility to services, obviously on the context of young people and the communities that they're growing up in. So this really talks about Donegal being an effective poverty. So effective poverty means people who are working but cannot make ends meet. People that are struggling, they're having to make decisions on a daily basis about, you know, putting the lights on, putting the heat on, putting the food on the table. So I have been at loads of national meetings, and I always say in Donegal, we do it differently. We go above and beyond. I feel like working in the community and voluntary sector, that's evident. We don't take things lying down. You know, we try to get around things in whichever way we can. We try to use the funding that we can in the most efficient, effective, and kind of trying to stretch things and make things work for us. So I feel like as a county, we have that as a positive. We have that going for us, but we're constantly banging our heads against this I suppose this distance from Dublin.
Well, there is that saying. There is that sign that the rising tide lifts all boats, but clearly they don't, because we're told it's an incredibly wealthy country with a growing economy. There are massive gaps nationally, but those gaps are wider in Donegal. And there doesn't seem to be any appetite for any regional sort of focus in relation to this. So what could, you know, what needs to be done, Lorraine, or is this just...
We need to do it differently. Yeah. That's what I mean. Okay. We need to, you know, put it all on the table and do things differently. What about a specific plan for Donegal? Yeah, what about a plan that looks at, you know, obviously, I mean, you've talked for, I don't know how many shows about the transport infrastructure, the problems with the A5, you know, why are we not attracting more inward investment into this county? You know, even to have a minister in the county is always a coup for us. Doesn't really matter which party it's from, because we need to always have a minister here.
But has that benefited us, though? Like, for instance, it's things like ATU having a professor. It's little things like that that increase maybe the output from universities and increase jobs and all that type of stuff. I'll come back to you, Troy. I want to bring you in here as well.
Yeah, thanks. I agree with the points that Lorraine said. I mean, when I read that, I was really taken aback by, even with the amount of positive stuff that has been done with investment and with Fintru and with the farmers and Letterkenny. From my own experience of tackling poverty through being a councillor in Islington, I think Donegal needs its own anti-poverty strategy. Focus solely on Donegal and look at the key work streams that come from that, which is low wages, which is housing, which is food and fuel poverty, and access to healthcare. I think when I read it, I thought, what could be done for Donegal? That has, I think there's no joint up between the department and the local authority in having a key milestone plan with each work streams. They're done through what we do in Islington is through local area plans. So you've got one for obviously Cairndonagh, Moville and Inishowen has got its own one. But it needs one across, including for the Frostis, Annagh and Gweedore, which is left behind even within Donegal, even further. I think what it needs a multifaceted approach between food suppliers, obviously the local authority, retailers and producers to be able to come to an agreement about how we actually work together to reduce the cost of food. And I think also one of the things that we managed to do was to build what's called community wealth building, is using our assets to be able to generate wealth and reinvest that back in the communities. I also think that the charities we've got huge, with the richness we have for community spirit and people being involved in charities, as Lorraine rightly said, I think charities need to be seen as a key partner.
Worry where we would be at without the food banks, without cancer flights and services, without those working with children with disabilities, without those campaigning so strongly on health services. You would wonder how wide the gap might be without those people. Grania, what's your feelings?
Yeah, I think it's very sad to think in this day and age, and I think transport is one of the things, because you're not going to have people investing are coming here unless they have adequate roads, or obviously we'll never get a train, but at least let us have proper transport. The next thing is that I think there should be a survey on households who are suffering from poverty, and I think there should be, the council should know and try and instigate policies that will support these people.
Yes.
They should be, like, food banks are fine, but it's not nice.
People is that not done during budget time, where you target resources at those that need the most, rather than universal payments and or no payments at all, that you actually, it's the state that has the data on the households mm-hmm. that need the support most, but they don't seem to want to put in specific targeted measures, Grania.
Well, it's very difficult to just give things to us, not give them to the rest of the country. So, I mean, they have that problem, but Donegal is definitely neglected.
Mm. But they've done it for the islands for years, Grania, so why not us?
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yes, possibly. But I think a survey should be done on the income going into each area and each house and the facilities. Like, transport is one of the big things as well for people going to hospitals. Like, for older people, the older people's executive are working on things, but we're not allowed to lobby. We're not allowed to, you know, really, we have to go through the Age Friendly Alliance, which then has to go to the County Council, which is long gone out. I just would like to comment on one little thing. Dr. Keating, I have been fighting for the A&E for better seating and maybe an annexed area for older people for, I don't know, 10 years. Now, I met Dr. Keating the other day, and she has promised to, she has actually ordered more comfortable furniture. And I'd like to thank Greg as well for his interest in the hospital, because only for this program, I don't think this surgical hub would ever have
needed.
So thank you very much. And to say that they are working, people are working for older people, they're working for the differently abled. Okay. People in the county are very good. But we do need funding and we do need investment.
Okay, Grania. And thanks, by the way.
ATU is here now and money needs to be poured into it.
For sure.
Because that is a great asset to the country, to the county.
And listen, thanks for your nice comments there. I do have to take a break, Grania, because unfortunately that's the only way we can pay our bills, because we don't get that delicious license fee money. Just time for a quickie, if that's okay. Should we continue to switch our clocks twice a year for daylight savings time, given the ongoing debate whether the slight benefits, as you could argue, saving energy, having lighter evenings or brighter mornings or safer mornings, outweigh the negative impacts on health like disrupted sleep and the general hassle of changing the time? Grania, briefly, should we continue to jump back and forwards with our clocks?
Yes, we should. I can draw my curtains a bit later in the evening and it's not such a long night. So for older people, yes, I think so.
All right. Well, I didn't ask you to be that brief, but that'll do. Lorraine Thompson, what do you think?
Well, it took me years to remember spring forward, fall backwards, and move it on there.
But if it wasn't for sure, I wouldn't freaking know. Like, if I could turn back.
I do think, listen, I mean, as a parent of small kids back in the day, if somebody had to put that on the table, I'd have been delighted, because it's a disaster when you have small children and you're trying.
Lorraine, I'm just getting used to explain to Hudson that it's dark in the mornings now, and then it's going to get a bit bright in the mornings, and then it's going to get dark in the mornings again. It's a nightmare.
You mean if they change it?
Yeah, when they change it. What way does it go? Sorry, which way does it go? It goes back. It falls back.
Fall backwards.
Right?
Spring forward. Yeah.
It's dark now when he's waking up. It's going to be bright again at the end of October, and then it's going to start getting dark again. It's very confusing.
It is all very confusing anyway. I do think whatever they decide to do, we have to be aligned.
They're
Northern Ireland, can you imagine having to change your clock every time you cross the border?
Troy, what do you think?
And that's why I'm against it. No, it shouldn't be scrapped because of economic disruption it would cause to post-Brexit UK and Ireland relations. If the EU was to go out of it and UK to remain, there'd be a time border between the North and the South.
All right. Okay. Listen, Troy, it's been great having you on the show. You're over in London. Are you due back anytime soon?
I'm back for Christmas. But may I briefly say a huge congratulations to Alderman Vincent Keaveney, who's receiving the Tipper Award.
Yeah, we were chatting to him yesterday.
Yeah, and a great man, good friend, and wish him well. Couldn't be there tonight, but looking forward to be back at Christmas.
Lovely stuff. We look forward to having you back. It's not going to be that far away. Lorraine Thompson, lovely to have you on the show as always. Look after yourself. Bye-bye. And Grania Hines, great to see you again. It seems like it's been a while. Let's not leave it so long.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
All right, Grania, thank you so much and for all of your opinions, as always. Take care of yourself. All right. That's that. We appreciate Lorraine Thompson's time. Councillor Troy Gallagher, he's a Labour Party councillor over in Islington in London. And also Grainne Hynes, who's a member of the Letterkenny Active Retirement and also a regular listener as well as a contributor to the programme. Thank you so much for all of your comments coming in. Not going to lie, it really is the presidential election that seems to be dominating your comments this morning. So we'll catch up on those and all of the rest of the day's news, your views and some features between now and 12. But have a cup of tea or something whilst you listen to the news. We'll be back just after 10.